Hey everybody, welcome to Clean Cut Casual Season 1 Episode 2. I am Ethan Schultz, the podcast moderator and casual cardboard lover. With me today are some old friends and one new friend from the rafters of Ohio. If you guys want to go ahead and introduce yourselves, starting with the creepiest man at the table.
Chris, a.k.a. Creepy Chris.
Ryan, a.k.a. AP Chaos.
APK, I don't include my last name ever. Continue.
Ryan Hicks, there we go.
Greetings, Earthlings, this is Z from Northeastern Ohio. Good to be here.
So, Z is actually joining us from the northern part of the lovely state, heart of the country, Ohio.
He said that.
Wayne County, represent.
Yeah, represent. All of us Ohio River friends are, you know, accepting of new people from up north.
Yeah. We gotta play Mississippi Queen.
Playing board games all weekend. Great.
Not played Mississippi Queen.
I know, we need to. I haven't played it either, and I own it.
Imagine Formula D, except slower.
Except riverboats. And you use coal.
That'd be fun. We have to play the Princess and the Frog soundtrack with
it. Bayou, down in Devil's Bayou.
Speaking of soundtracks, we have had an excellent weekend of many soundtracks being played from the iPhone on a multitude of games. We are going on, what, like 30-some-odd hours of board games now this weekend?
And nothing but board games. And Z is the one that brought the themes. He's a very thematic player.
And this was actually Z's idea to have this board gaming marathon, which was great. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, what else is he going to do? Fucking, like, sleep in your son's bed at home and do nothing? Like,
well, that's the reason why he came down was to play board games.
That's the first time.
So it was a pretty good Martin Luther King weekend then. So we pretty much have him to thank for this.
Yep, we do have him to thank.
Well, you're welcome. Lucky for you guys, I just came for rallies.
Apple pies, 2 for $1. Check them out.
So, I mean, if we want to, we can recap on games that we played this weekend.
Let's see. Super Dungeon Explorer was my big one that I wanted to play, which was awesome.
Super Dungeon Explorer is excellent. If anyone hasn't played it yet, it is a dungeon crawler, and it's themed in, like, 8-bit NES. Yes. Like, almost like arcade gameplay. Think it's almost like a board game version of Gauntlet.
With a ton of miniatures.
With a ton of great-looking, like, chibi anime miniatures.
I don't get hard over there.
It's excellent. It's
really, the miniatures really were made by Cool Mini or Not. They make awesome casting. They make awesome miniatures.
Is the whole game made by Cool Mini?
Cool Mini or Not just does the miniatures. Yeah. Okay. Like, they do the miniatures for Zombie Side also. They're doing the miniatures
for... I think
it was
Soda Pop and Cool Mini or Not, I think. So, because Soda Pop originally just made miniatures.
You know what? No. They didn't do Cool Mini. Cool Mini or Not did not do.
Is it just Soda Pop?
It's Soda Pop Miniatures did that. Soda Pop Miniatures did the miniatures for Super Dungeon Explorer, and they're really good too.
Which is phenomenal.
But Cool Mini or Not, they are starting to make a lot of miniatures for games. Like, they did Zombie Side, they're doing Rivet Wars this year, and they're also doing Sedition Wars, Battle for Alabaster Station.
And they're doing some Kingdom Death monster promos for the people that kickstarted that game Kickstarter.
For the creepy people.
But if anyone
kickstarted it, like, $300.
$500, yeah. Thank you. $500 fucking dollars.
Which we'll get into that when we talk about our most anticipated games. But yeah, Super Dungeon Explorer, really fun. One person is the Overlord, they're like a council. The cards are really, really thematic.
For once, it wasn't Ryan.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the best part, honestly.
And
we died.
And they got to actually see what type of character I like to play in a game, which was interesting, you know.
Yeah, I was a wizard.
I like to play as wizard. That doesn't happen that often because normally I'm the bad guy.
A girl wizard.
Girl wizard, yes.
So a hot girl wizard.
Hot girl wizard. By sorceress.
Chibi-looking miniatures. Yes. Anyway.
But the D-pad... was your movement, which that's all I gotta say. Like, it looked like a D-pad on a controller.
And then the B
movement.
Or A button was how many actions you had, which was awesome.
It was very fun.
Super, super thematic. Amazing.
Anyone else want to go into a game we played this weekend?
Well, hell, we started the entire weekend playing...
I think Z should talk about what he wanted to play, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess you were
that was
the one,
you, buddy.
One that was your request of game of the weekend. So.
There's a whole reason you drove 3 hours down here, so...
Well...
You should talk about it.
There were other reasons, but... Middle Earth Quest by Fantasy Flight Games. We started off with that this weekend, and what can I say? It's a great game. I wasn't surprised at that, and very thematic. I don't know if you got
for no one that's played it, Ryan. What was the two objectives inside the game? How did the turns really play out?
really how the turns played out is that there's a story track on the top of the board that Sauron has markers. There's a Sauron player, who's a bad guy player, which was me,
Ryan.
Which was me. And then there was hero players, which the game is max at 4. And the heroes are trying to advance their story marker before the Sauron player advances their story marker. And in addition to that, you each have secret objectives that you're trying to complete. But not getting into too much of the game, it's really nice because it's two completely different play styles, with Sauron doing actions to spread his influence across Middle-earth and to, you know, further his plots to make his story markers go faster, where the heroes are trying to move around Middle-earth and consult with the different characters in the Tolkien lore to gain favor with them and to also get level-ups and training to prepare for fighting the minions of the Shadow. It's really, really cool. If anyone wants to check it out, it's themed, you know, it's Lord of the Rings theme completely, of course, Middle-earth Quest, but it takes some good things from other board games, like a lot of Arkham Horror elements. Do you think so?
The card fighting style. I don't know if Dungeon Quest the fighting for the cards was a
combat system.
For the heroes, it's all about managing your deck. There's no die rolls in this game, so, and I'm a big custom dice person, but I really like how you manage your cards in this game, because for the heroes, they have a stack of cards, and with those cards, it's their life. And also, they use those cards every turn to move to different locations. And then whenever they fight monsters, they have to use that same deck of cards to fight monsters also. So it's all about managing their cards and knowing, you know, when to use them right and when to draw more cards. And really, really interesting in that part.
The game also has, in my opinion, arguably, one of the most beautiful boards that you could ever see in a board game. So it's huge, huge.
I feel like we constantly add people who are just like, obsessed with other small things about board games.
I honestly think
Ryan is custom dice and linen finish, and now we got beautiful boards.
Yeah, I honestly think the best compliment of that game, honestly, was the balance system that's inside that game.
Oh yeah,
that was probably the best aspect to that game.
Needless to say, the Overlord kind of
got owned. But
remove something he shouldn't have for the end.
Yeah, I was an idiot. There's one turn left, and I removed something, not realizing that I couldn't add anything else the next turn. So it would have ended with not a tie, but, you know, we would have had a final battle instead of you
with
guys
some
just
rates.
Winning.
I would like to add, too, though, like, even though it's a Lord of the Rings game, because I'm not really well-versed in Lord of the Rings games, or Lord of the Rings, period.
Lore, in general.
I've seen the movies, you know, herpety derp. I haven't read the books like most people who are big in the Lord of the Rings. But, you know, it wasn't so overflooded with, like, Lord of the Rings terminology and topics and locations and stuff that, like, even me, somebody coming in who pretty much has, like, no damn idea about Lord of the Rings could still, like, enjoy. It wasn't like I was playing it and then being like, where is the city? I don't know where it's located. Like, just how it actually, like, allocates where city and locations are.
With colors.
Yeah, the cards were colored for the locations.
Color-coded, so, you know, if not everyone knows where, like, the ruins of Angmar are, you know, which is in the northern part of Middle-earth. That's where the Witch King used to be. But
wouldn't you know where the ruins of Angmar are? I mean, seriously.
I'm pretty sure it's close to the Shire.
It's probably located somewhere in northern
Ohio. You gotta go north to go south, so.
That's right.
I have to go north to go south?
But also, just adding something for, you know, overlords and stuff like that, that has a diminishing resource effect for Sauron. So whenever he takes actions, he can't keep taking the same action over again. It diminishes what he can do. Like, the first time I do, like, I can play 6 influence. If I do another influence action, I can only place 5. So it's not like I can just keep doing the same thing and getting the most powerful result, which I think that's a really cool aspect of the game, definitely.
And the miniatures. Miniatures are awesome.
Miniatures are awesome.
Yeah.
Especially the Nazgul, the Ringwraith miniature.
Yes, that's,
with the 3
that's
riders.
A very awesome.
The Ringwraiths are awesome miniatures.
We'll have to take a picture of it and put it up on the site, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty sweet.
Really cool.
We'll just use it for everything. I mean, it's a little bit more than your average player, but I don't think it's complex enough that, like, someone who hasn't played a decent amount of, like, average
it doesn't have too many... Yeah.
I think it's heavy for you if you're not used to playing a long game, if you're expecting a board game to be an hour.
Yeah.
It's going to be a 3.5-hour game.
We slotted what, like an hour and a half?
Hour and a half for that,
so
I think.
We ended up playing.
Is
like,
what we. No, you slotted.
I put 3 hours.
Okay.
I slotted 3 hours.
3 hours. And we still went over, I believe.
We went 3.5.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of unnecessary rules where you just have to remember tons of crap. Like, things flow.
No, it went really, really fast, and you don't realize how quickly your hours are going away.
Yeah. So there's Middle-earth Quest.
Middle-earth Quest.
We followed that up with Smash Up, which was awesome.
I'm just not even going to speak during this portion of the podcast. Like, just my suggestion, pirates, dinosaurs,
terrible. Smash Up is a game made by AEG, and it's a deck building game. There's six races.
Not a deck building
Shuffle building game.
You smash up two different races into one deck, and that's all you do for like the building aspect.
And then you lose.
And then you lose
two ninja zombies.
You lose the ninja zombies.
ninja zombies are probably the most overpowered combo.
But Chris, what are all the races? Right,
there's pirates, dinosaurs, which are great. Ninjas, zombies.
Ninja zombies.
Leprechauns.
Ugh.
Then there's wizards, robots,
Martians.
Yeah, how can we forget Martians? That was Z's. Yeah. Martians.
And of course, it's rife for expansions. More expansions.
They already have some in the works. Yes. I believe. Not sure what they are, but
It's a very quick game. Definitely a lot of fun. Don't play with people who do not like competitive games.
It is not friendly at all.
It's not friendly whatsoever.
It is cutthroat.
It is cutthroat. You will.
That's why Ethan didn't enjoy it, because he got dicked.
I got severely dicked.
Because the main objective of this game is you have locations out on the board, and once you hit that set number, you can score it. Well, Ethan had like seven cards on one location, and Ryan played a card that removed all creatures that were two or low, which was pretty much all of Ethan's creatures.
Which were pretty much all pirates. Because pirates are a bunch of pussies.
And robots are incredible.
Yeah, robots are super.
They gave me plus 16.
It wasn't the fact that it was a terrible game. Like, it's an enjoyable game. I like playing it. It's just...
It's quick, too.
I feel like for that game, though, there's the circumstance where, like, if you've played it more than three times...
Oh, yeah, you have a huge advantage.
You have a huge advantage because you know what the cards are.
Which means I have the huge advantage, because right. I think I'm the only one that's played it more than twice, so...
Yeah, and I had played it for the first time, so I was like, yeah. Dino Pirates.
You know? Dynomite!
Dynomite! Yeah, I lost. Terribly lost. A little bit scarred for life. But.
What was after that game that we played?
Was that Super Dungeon?
No, it was Cosmic Encounter.
Cosmic Encounter!
Which was my rebuttal to my loss at Smash Up.
Yeah. Cosmic Encounter, if you've never played it, you have to play it. Cosmic Encounter is unlike any other game. It's a really old game, too.
Purple hats.
It was originally published by Mayfair.
Yeah, there's an old
yeah,
copy
the old copy
there.
Back there.
It looks hideous.
It's hideous. It was Mayfair, and then Avalon Hill remade it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then Fantasy Flight redid it, and Fantasy Flight also added two expansions to it. But it is a space themed game, but like tons of aliens. There's like 50 different races in the game, and pretty much it's all about alliances and trying to smooth your way into talking to help other people, to have them help you, and you know, being very nefarious.
And then you turn around and you dick them.
Yes.
For the win.
Yes.
And with the fact that there's 50 different races and there's different cards you add depending on what races you do, I mean, there you will never play the same game twice. It's insane. So Cosmic Encounter is definitely very good. It's hard to put that into words a little bit more, because
that game kind of falls into a whole
different.
It's like a smorgasbord.
Yeah,
of
it's its own thing. It's really unique. You know, there's a lot of video reviews out there that show it. I'm sure we'll be doing a video review on it sometime soon, definitely.
Really?
And you know, check it out if it's something that looks really interesting. So yeah, stay tuned with different video reviews and how to play videos. It's something we're really wanting to do here.
Play as the loser.
Yeah, play as
the
loser
or the parasite. Both of those races are pretty.
Misery was pretty cool. Misery.
I'm still licking my wounds from that game, man. That was a bad round for Z.
You draw a card, and the card shows you who you attack that turn, which is really interesting because you can't really gang up too well on someone. And then you attack that person, you put how many ships you want to go in to fight that person, and then you try and invite players around the table. And I would be like, Z and Chris, I would like you guys to help if I'd be attacking Ethan. And Ethan would be like...
I'd probably say no one join me because I'm the loser.
Yeah, which is great. Then we each pick an encounter card and reveal it, and whoever has the highest attack wins. But it's more than that, because if you have negotiate cards, you can... Instead of an attack card, you can negotiate, and we can make a deal to,
you know...
bluff
your negotiate.
And then play an attack.
You can play flares, you can lie.
If you...
flares. Oh, God.
Some people who enjoy magic a lot would like it with the different, you know, like zapping the different things, you know, like the counter spells and everything like that. They're called card zaps where you cancel an effect and you can card zap a card zap, which is awesome.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Card zap and card zap's great. And then you card zap that card zap, and then it goes in the stack.
Infinite circle.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about stacks now.
Yeah, there you go.
Stacks upon triggers and games. Wizards would be proud.
So there's that. Escape.
Oh, yeah. That game's always fucking awesome to play.
It is awesome. It's a game that takes 10 minutes. It's so good.
It literally takes 10 or less if you're
thug. If you're skilled, game, if you're good players.
Which we do pretty well, unless you play with Clint, who Clint sometimes trails behind.
Well,
he was helping me. I was like, what's going on?
You don't want to separate in that game.
Yeah.
Ever.
As you stare at me, even though I was the one who helped us get out.
You were like 7 rooms away from everyone else. And you were locked up.
Indiana Jones, baby. It's going down.
There's no turns in Escape. You're constantly rolling your action dice and doing different actions with your custom dice, which look great. And there's a soundtrack playing, and the soundtrack is 10 minutes. And once that soundtrack's done, if you haven't escaped from the temple, you lose collectively as a group, because the escape is fully cooperative. You're playing against the game. You're trying to escape the temple. But it's really unique. There's nothing else out there like it. It can literally be played in 10 minutes. Very easy to teach.
And had a recent expansion.
And, the expansion's included with the game.
Yes.
Like now it is? Okay.
Yeah, yes. When you buy it, it comes with two different variants, curses and treasures.
Yeah.
And if you don't play it with the curses or treasures, you know, it's very, very fun, very easy to teach. Curses and treasures add a whole different level of wackiness to it. So, definitely. And speaking of wacky, that kind of correlates to our next game that we played.
Oh, gosh.
That was really late at night.
Which was when Chris was starting to doze off and to unsafe driving.
I don't think he even remembers what it was.
Do you remember playing that game?
Do you remember playing that game?
We played Dungeon Fighter.
We did play Dungeon Fighter. So. Yeah.
And that game is ridiculous.
We actually did so good playing that
game at like 1 o'clock in the morning than we ever have completely coherent.
I'm pretty sure it was later than one though when we played that.
It was close to three.
It was a long night.
A.M. folks.
Yeah.
A.M.
And we started at
like 1:30.
We started at 2 p.m. like 2 p.m. that day.
Yes.
So we played all day.
Yeah, I had hung up the towel long before we started that game.
Yeah. It was the Riley's kicking.
It was a bad move playing at that night.
Yeah, it was awful.
But it's very, very fun. It's a dexterity-based game where you're throwing dice onto a target board to do damage to a monster. And it's hilarious because there'll be different shots you have to make, like underneath your leg, closing your eyes,
jumping off your nose, off your head. Bounce it off your head, jump up, spin around. Get under the table, throw it under your leg without looking. It's complete silliness and a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
It would totally be a drinking game if you wanted to do that.
And there's another game that's along the same lines of it that we haven't gotten
serious,
to play
yet. Serious game.
Well, it's a little bit more serious. It's called Catacombs. And Catacombs is a flicking game.
It is like a shuffleboard.
Yeah.
Really. And it is intense.
It's intense. It's actually very, very good. Catacombs.
Oh, it's ridiculously amazing. There is also an overlord, Ryan. Whatever.
The overseer in that game. Jeez, we have overseer, overlord, and consul.
Yeah.
And Sarah.
And
Sarah. Yeah, Sarah.
You mean Sarah.
You mean Sarah.
Sarah.
Who's the Sarah player?
No.
Oh,
okay.
You're close, though.
My bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty much Sarah, because the guy that played it played like a pussy anyway.
I made it challenging. Whatever.
Everybody knows how the story goes. Good wins.
I know.
Might as well not even play.
Oh, that's interesting, too. Middle Earth Quest takes place in between the time of Bilbo's 111th birthday to the time that Frodo sits out in the ring on the quest. So it's all like new characters and all kind of new lore made for that game. Like, it's not really, you know.
It doesn't exist in
it. It doesn't exist. Like, all the areas and everything exist in it, but not like those battles didn't really. Like, it's super good, though. Like, definitely makes sense.
So then, after some wacky text messages from Chris trying to make it home from his sleepy drive.
Which was awful, by the way.
I don't even know what I texted them, but I'm pretty sure
Chris was so tired that I literally thought he was going to pass out.
Yeah, it was awful. I had to drive home with the window down and my eyes bugged open, just completely trying to stay focused at everything that was going on. Not to pass out while I'm driving. It was awful.
And whenever he got home, he texted me, "I escaped the caverns. The dragons were in and made it home."
So wow. we all went home, got somewhat of a well night's rest.
Like
well, everybody
four
went home
or five
except
hours.
Me because I hung out a little too late, and then eventually I showed up a little too late for the next morning. Which then I showed up right in the setup period of Super Dungeon Explorer.
Which was so, so good.
Which is so good.
Yeah.
You know, if it was, if it was, if it was of 2012, it would be a best of 2012.
Yeah, it's so good.
It barely scalped like 2011, didn't it?
It came out in 2011, and then they redid the rules for a version 1.2 to make up some errors that were just written errors inside the rule book, and then they clarified some, like a small FAQ in the back, and then some minor rules that were confusing. And that actually made the game a lot better than what it was the first time I played it, because I had a chance to play it in 2011, and I'm pretty confident the people I played with it probably played it more wrong than reading the rules wrong. Which totally destroyed the game for me, because when I first played it, it took about 4.5 hours, and I really wanted the game, but I did not want a 4.5 hour game.
And you had a really sour experience.
Yeah, it ruined the game for me, because I wanted it for about 6 months, and then when I had the opportunity to play it, it was awful. Like, no fun. I'm pretty sure all the characters were already pre-overpowered the way they were playing it, and I think they played the wound counters wrong, because there's a tracking system inside the game. Every time you deal a wound, no matter if it's the Consulier or the heroes, the wound tracker goes up. And then once you hit certain bits, you go from 8-bit to 16 to super. When super hits,
which is awesome.
The boss spawns. When 16-bit hits, if you're playing with three or more players, a mini-boss spawns at the end of the round.
And then at the end of the game, you just proceed to get pulverized
by the
dragon
boss and all the other spawn points.
But it's super thematic. And
now, were you guys playing it wrong to where you did more damage each turn?
Yes.
Really?
I think we played it where, like, dead instantly. Because it's one wound per attack. And I think we played it where if you rolled 5 stars and they only rolled 2 for defense, that did 3 damage, which is just devastating to either side.
Which
honestly
is how like Descent works, and you know Gears of War the board game, and Mice and Mystics. You know that's
everything,
how that works.
Every other game.
But this game is designed to where when you do wounds, the game progresses. So the game would be over in like 2 turns if it'd be that way.
Yes. It's either a hit or a miss.
It's either a hit or a miss. Yes. One hit does a wound. Yes. The more dice you have, is a better probability of getting more stars
and
than
then
the
having
opponent.
A better version of dice, obviously.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they instantly like attached equipment as soon as they found it for loots. I don't think they ever reversed the loot tracker until it got all the way to the end. So it was just a combination of bad experience, not the greatest rule book. So, but I'm glad that I bought it.
Chris,
we got to play it.
There probably will have to be a future how to play segment of all of us discussing how to play Super Dungeon Explorer due to the number of circumstances that we've witnessed people playing it incorrectly.
Yeah, and even here at the local shop that we play at, I've noticed people still occasionally play it wrong.
And Chris, you did an exceptionally good job with printing out the reference, because there are a lot of key terms in this game. It's not just like daze, poison, you know, like 4 things. There's, you know, magic.
Slow.
Sorry. Yeah.
Blast wave.
Missile.
Burst.
Burst.
It took us a
weak,
while. It took
fire.
Us a while to kind of find
ice.
Out how type of attacks like burst and waves and stuff, how like if like a burst one was like a particular size range. We were kind of like, wait, what's the difference?
And someone made a great cheat sheet on that. It wasn't me. I found it off Board Game Geek's forums. Or actually in their PDF file section for Super Dungeon Explorer. And whoever made that did a phenomenal job at making a quick reference sheet. So.
Oh, that wasn't... I know that I thought there was a quick reference sheet with the game,
there,
too.
There is one in the back. He literally... Whoever made that reference sheet did all of the abilities.
Oh,
not just...
That's awesome.
The, I think there was like 8 in the back of the actual book. But this guy did all of them, which is about 30. So.
Yeah, it's a little bit overbearing with keywords, definitely. But, you know, the fact that he made those sheets, you know, I knew what my character did, which was the important thing.
Right.
You're only focusing on about 4 or 5 of them if you know what your character
right.
does.
And each character isn't, you know, isn't made on a level or like a tier that turns into the circumstance where they have like 10 different terms that you need to know. You know, like most of them, it's usually like 1 or 2, you know, main words that you need to know.
Yep.
And then your basic attack and then like your potion. Like, it's not like you have like 30 different abilities of all different types that you're like, well, shit, like, which one's proper one for this circumstance?
Yeah. Unless you play as the Hex Enchantress. then there's like seven.
And then you just piss off the overlord over
overseer. Oh, you're weak. Oh, what's that do? You roll, you discard your best attack die. Oh, you're ice. Oh, what's that do? You discard your best dexterity roll. Oh, you're on fire. What's that do? Oh, you got knocked down. What's that do?
It's a chain of terms.
Yeah, it's great though.
So
and once you got it, you got it.
So from Super Dungeon Explorer, we led into playing...
I think it was Constantinopolis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yes,
it was.
Yes. Yes.
Which was a Euro win for the Euro game lovers.
Yeah. Constantinopolis is a good game. It's
Well, the whole reason
we
played
that was Ethan really wanted to play Puerto Rico, which
I haven't played it, and I've heard really good things about it.
Constantinopolis is nowhere near the quality and tier of Puerto Rico, but Constantinopolis does a lot of good things right, and good things right, a lot of things right.
It does things quite well.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a Fantasy Flight game. Also, it's kind of outside the norm.
Really,
it's Fantasy Flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bought that off their winter sale 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's that and like, you know, Kingsburg and like Olympus. Those are more of the Euro style games. Yeah.
And those are made by
Ad Astra.
It's like Strategili, that's like the
Dolly of Fantasy Flight Euro games.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice because, you know, you play as merchants in Constantinopolis trying to get the most fame, so victory points, and the turns flow really well. You know, once you get the turns down, everything is simultaneous except for one phase, which is buying buildings. So there's eight phases in each round, and you know, once you get it down, you guys are doing things quick. So, you know, I enjoyed the game. You know, not the best Euro game ever, but it's really fun.
I hate Euro games, and I actually had fun with it. I still can't win any. But
there's a lot of different ways to win, which is great. You know, you can use utility buildings, get victory points. You can send.
It had that Seven Wonders element. Yeah. Where it's like you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, but there's more than enough options that you could be like, oh, we can kind of exploit this until someone catches on, then exploit this until someone catches on. So
what would you place that as, Z? Like, it's not worker placement. It would be like just like resource management.
Yeah, and I would say resource management. Yeah. There are a lot of resource management games. Worker purchasing?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. There are a lot of games in that category that are really, really, really good.
Could be considered an economy game,
sure.
Too.
And maybe this is the snob in me. There's also some out there that are just gorgeous, you know what I mean? And so, other than that, you know, the mechanics were solid and stuff like that.
The good thing is that it didn't really feel too similar to anything.
No, I didn't think so. Yeah.
Like, to the point to where, like...
I wouldn't say it was anything that was, like, new, but it was a lot of, like, rehashed ideas put together.
Put together in a kind of a different way, but it wasn't like, this is just this with a different skin.
Yeah. And it wasn't even that difficult, really, to learn to play. I think my only pet peeve with the game was kind of the situation where there was like we're
30 money.
Well, not that too, but it was more the idea where it was like everybody would have like the couple phases where everybody played at the same time, where we were kind of like, well, can we now move our resources into our buildings in order to get money or to get supplies in order, and then can we buy boats and then send the boats? It was like, for me, it took me a little while to catch on. To catch on that the boats ship actually at the second phase of the next turn. Like, I thought they shipped at the end of the turn, so I was always like, shit, where's all my money? Like,
yeah, it's very loose whenever it's, you know, well, it's structured, but then whenever it's one phase, it's like, oh, during the buy buildings phase, you can buy buildings, you can trade the market, you can use your commercial buildings whenever you want. So,
you know what would have made that game amazing? Is if we would have played that song that goes with it. You know that?
Constantinople.
Dun, 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 to Constantinople. Dun, bum, 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 bum.
I guess I'm too young for that song.
Putting on
Istanbul. Istanbul.
Yeah.
Just Tiny put that Tunes. On repeat, and man.
I'll stick with Final Fantasy XI.
Okay.
Oh, we did play like every single Final Fantasy battle theme for Super Dungeon Explorer, which was great.
It was awesome.
So from Constantinopolis, we had a battle with Chinese food. Yes. Where Z ordered an entire meal of General Tso's and...
an entire meal of sweet and sour chicken.
Mm.
But it was a variety.
I'm full.
I'm still full from the Chinese this afternoon.
Yes.
I'm getting hungry again.
Even the waitress was like, a lot of food.
Yeah.
China House, you know, downtown.
I
or Old Milford.
Old Milford. Downtown Old Milford.
Downtown Old Milford, China House. It's moved once. The General Tso's is delicious. Actually, decently priced, too, for Chinese
food. Best around, honestly, yeah. In this area.
Extra sauce, might I add, is free if it's on the meal.
But if you want it on the side,
it's an extra buck.
Yeah,
so.
If it's on the side, it's an extra buck.
Which you probably actually get more sauce when it's actually put on the meal than it is in a cup on the side.
And she's like, I can just put it on your rice if you want me to. I'm like, well, that's what I wanted. That's perfect.
You should have told her to put it on a saucer next to your rice. Yeah. And be like, I don't want it in a cup. I just want it in a saucer.
I should have said, could you make a crater in my rice so I could still dip my crab rangoon in like mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
Which, proceeding from the excellent Chinese food that we suffered a coma from, we came back and we played a round of...
Flashpoint Fire Rescue, which we'll actually talk about later in this podcast, because we're going to do a small, like, review over it.
It's an awesome filler game.
Yes, it's super good.
Yeah, we will discuss further of this, you know, probably in the next 10 minutes or so. Or no, we actually have a different topic before that.
Yes, we do.
And after that...
After that, I left to the lovely thing called employment for 2 hours, which was dreadful, covered in bleach, while these three
while he was gone
without me.
We played City of Horror.
Yeah, that was fun.
That's really creepy.
Which is an awesome, awesome fun zombie game, because I love some zombies.
Talk about that game for a little bit. That game's extremely unique.
Yes, that game is, what would you qualify that as, really? More of a...
Backstab.
It's definitely a backstab slash negotiation.
It's similar to a game that was released called Mall of Horror, and this game completely can replace Mall of Horror, in my opinion. Mall of Horror is fun, but the card mechanics and everything with City of Horror...
Even the same company produces it, which is weird.
Yeah, I need to see if it's designed by the same people, too.
Yeah.
Because it's very similar. But, yeah, continue. It's really fun, especially if you have a group. Oh, man.
In my opinion, it is the perfect theme for what that game's trying to do. It set up the zombie survival, you know, scenario perfectly. There is basically a total of 6 sections on the board. You get 4 turns because you're waiting for the helicopter that is above the town or above the city to come down and rescue you. You have, depending on how many players you play, depicts how many characters you get. We played with 4 people, so we all got 4 characters. The shitty part of the game that makes it so hard is you only get to move 1 character per round. So you really, really got to decide on where you're going to move and what you need to do.
And that game's only 4 rounds.
Yes, so you only get to move each character 4 times. If you move them once.
There's a lot more... There's a lot to each turn, though. That
yes,
you're able to
yes. There's a lot to each turn. Definitely.
Yeah, don't let that fool anybody. Like those 4 moves are extremely crucial, take an hour and a half.
Yes,
like,
and that game is meant for you to only have 2 survivors if you're lucky, realistically, for each person.
Or be dead.
Yes, or be dead.
And
dying happens.
And
every turn,
unlike any other zombie game, because it's not, you know, like Zombicide. Which is incredible, but you know that's a different game where it's more of like a dungeon crawler esque game where you're moving around a map, or like zombies in general, Last Night on Earth. This is definitely more of just like a social. There's voting in the game, and each one of your characters count as victory points because you're trying to survive, and whoever has the most victory points at the end wins. So it has some Euro style stuff in there too, which is definitely good.
And
so.
Probably the biggest impact of that game is you start with a certain amount of action cards, and there is realistically no other way to get those unless the helicopter has dropped them into a location.
Which is very few and far between.
Yes.
They drop. The zombies come a lot more.
Yes. Zombies come a lot more.
Well, you want this action card? Here's 20
and
zombies.
There are actions you can do in each location, but to do most of those actions, you have to discard an action card to play that ability. So you are really... That is like your lifeline is those 6 action, you know, however many action cards you get dealt. That is like your lifeline or ticket out of there. And you have to leave on the 4th round after all locations have been resolved. You have to have a vaccine to even get on the helicopter.
For each character.
For each character. If you don't, those characters instantly die. And for every extra vaccine you had, you get an extra victory point. And then your characters have victory points issued on them in the top left corner of the card.
I would cut all ties with friendships before you play. That's a great idea. You'll like it so much better.
There are no friendships when the zombie apocalypse happens. It's every man for themselves.
And you can make someone else vote for you.
Yes.
Which is great.
Awesome
and,
card.
And you can make a water tower collapse.
Yes.
Did that happen to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
We destroyed it.
We used those cards.
Who was on top of it when it fell?
Clint and I. Store shop owner and I was on it because for the first two turns we got to peek
the
at the card.
Sorry, but they weren't on a water tower, you know, outside.
Yeah. We got to peek at the card to see where all the zombie placements go and the tokens and everything. And that's crucial in the game because you get to know where everything's moving and you can either tell the players or lie to them. And that's crucial. Do they believe you or do they just instantly assume that you're lying and try to go somewhere that you didn't mention?
I gotta tell you, I'm like craving that game again more than any other game right now. Just because it, like, at first it was kind of like, oh, you know, I'm trying to wrap my brain around everything, and then it just smoothed out so much that I think if we jumped back into it sooner than later, you know, you'll be able to really appreciate what the game
is. Yeah, once you play it once, I think you understand how the whole mechanics and the system of the game works. And then if you played it again, it would just fly right by.
That's an Asmodee game, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
A lot of Asmodee's games, you know, a lot of them are imports, and a lot of the games that they make are a lot like not just in general, but you know, they're all icon based because it's much cheaper to produce a game that you don't have to translate into, you know, 17 different languages. All the cards have icons. The board stuff all has icons. The only thing that is in multiple languages is the rules and the reference sheet that
tells
you what
the icons
mean.
Six of them.
So the first game, you're kind of learning all the icons and what they mean. You know, if it has a little green zombie with an X, it means, oh, this card kills a zombie. Got it. So, you know, the first game, you're kind of learning all the icons. If you've ever played Ghost Stories, that's another game where it's all icon-based. And, you know, once you play...
It's rough.
Yeah. Ghost Stories is one of the best co-op games.
If you win that game, you pretty much also have the same chance of winning the lottery. So.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a win-lose ratio of like 100 to 1.
Man. I would much rather win Ghost Stories
than
the
lottery.
Exactly,
yes.
I agree.
Wow.
I want to win the lottery and then buy a million copies of Ghost Stories.
So, you know, if you do pick this up, you know, go into it knowing that it's, you know, you're not just running around killing zombies. It's much more of a social game, which is fantastic.
And if you cannot be mean and cruel to your friends and they get offended or mad at it, it is not a game you would want to play because there is no friendships in that game.
And you got to play one game first so you understand the flow. You know all the icons, and then you're like, let's do it again, because you have a firm grasp on the strategy then.
Did you guys play it again?
No, we only played it once.
We should, though, because it is fun.
We played three Cutthroat games this whole weekend?
They're the best.
And yet we haven't played Cutthroat Caverns, which is incredible.
Yeah. Which somehow gets mentioned in every single podcast.
Yeah. That's because Cutthroat Caverns is phenomenal, because it's really co-op slash dick.
It's one of the only games where you won't accept a potion from someone because you don't want to give them victory points. Here, I'll heal you, buddy. No, it's fine. I don't care. I don't want you to get points, buddy.
I don't want anything. We're going to win that boss? I don't think so.
No.
See you later, one.
So, from that point, you guys eventually led into playing...
Ooh. Who wants to say it?
Ryan wants to say it. Oh. It's your game.
Legends of Andor.
That was a terrible intro. Jesus. I was waiting for it.
Victorious!
Legends of Andor is a game that just came out recently. A brand new game from Fantasy Flight's publishing it. It's a game. It's a Europe game. Gosh, who
it was
made
2012.
It was Cosmos. Yeah. It was a Cosmos.
Yeah,
so
2012.
It was a Cosmos game in Europe. Fantasy Flight published it for America. It is excellent. It's an adventure game. You learn the game as you go. There's six different scenarios in the game. The first scenario is like a tutorial. The designer designed it as an adventure game that he can play with his family. He really, really enjoyed it. He did a lot of artwork and a lot of other board games. I'm sorry I don't remember his name right now, but you know it's on Board Game Geek. You can check all that stuff.
We'll put that in the podcast notes.
Yeah, definitely. There you go. It's pretty much like a tutorial of a video game, the first scenario. Because like every time something happens, you reveal a new card that shows, oh, you know, now this is how combat works. And then you show
that's become a huge trend in most like kind of dungeon crawl quest-based games, though, is that like the first scenario is the scenario that's rather than going through 30 million pages, this is like the walkthrough.
Exactly. You know? This is true. This is a little bit different.
Yeah. So this has like a two-page rule
book. It has like no rule book. It's like, yeah
no
it's
rule like book. The rule one, book is you're playing the first.
The rule book is you're playing the first scenario.
There are story-based cards that teach you the first scenario. Like,
normally, yeah, there's a tracker on the side of the board that goes A to N. And as you progress, there's tokens on those, and then you read the corresponding cards that match those letters. And that's how you learn more about the game.
So the instructions in the game are in those cards.
Yes.
So in other words, is that the better option over Fury of Dracula?
It's completely different games.
Two totally different games.
Definitely.
And I would say this game's more thematic, and you really have to be into the flavor of every card. And
it's really fun. It definitely is really, really fun. Like,
really hard to explain.
Like, when you start out the game, there's tokens out there. Like, there's fog counters and, like, money wells. And wells. And
shops.
For the very intro scenario, and it's the only time you use the tokens. You never only use the tokens for this first scenario. And, like, a token for fog is when you end your turn on this base, you flip this token over and see what's on it and resolve those effects. The next player takes their turn.
It's like just a learning token. That's all it is.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
And then for, like, when you play the actual scenario, you just use normal fog tokens because you know how they work.
That'd be terrible if you flipped it over and had a depiction of a hand flipping a token over.
Yeah.
You have learned how to flip a token over.
Yay!
I think the best part about it, though, is you walk up to it and you're just like, wow. The art on it, the creatures that are in it, the player mats in front of you, they're all just so beautiful.
Expansions, too, because there's 5 scenarios. I wish there was more scenarios, really.
More.
I wish there's more.
I'm sure with the amount of, like, public or the amount of positive feedback that they've been getting about the game.
I'm pretty sure it's still in the top 50 for hotness for board games.
It's in the top 50 for hotness, yeah.
Yes.
It's ranked like 400 for, like, just quality, for good. So,
really?
Yeah, it's up there.
No, it's not at 400. I think it's at, like, 2,400. I'm pretty sure.
Time to check.
Let's see.
Somewhere else. You're ranked number 2 in the hotness. That's awesome.
I didn't even know Z was on the hotness report, Game Geek. I've never seen that.
If it's 2,400, it would have gone down, but it's really fun.
You got to think, there's so many games coming out now that it's just everything's ridiculous. Everything's so good.
And you played that, what?
Two times?
2.5 times.
It was fun.
2.5 times, including the.
It's 41 right now on the hotness. And Ryan was right. It's 485. My mistake.
I thought it was in the 400s. So.
485. Damn. It's up there quick.
Middle Earth Quest is 208, by the way. So Middle Earth Quest was really good.
King of Tokyo is 120.
Yeah, we played King of Tokyo also.
Without Ethan.
We will never talk about a King of Tokyo on this podcast. I do not care if that means we will never have someone from Tokyo listen to this podcast. We will never talk about King of Tokyo on this podcast.
I'll do a video review for King of Tokyo so we can...
And it will never make its way to the Clean Cast.
But yeah, so Legends of Andor led us up to now.
Now.
The podcast.
Discussing you. Yeah. So after discussing our lovely weekend of board games together and filling our tummies with Chinese, we've got a couple different topics we're going to be talking about throughout this podcast. The main topic that we're going to dive into in a short bit is actually going to be the best and worst of the 20 dozen of last year from our best and worst scenarios and circumstances we've ever experienced from the games that we've recently played. But first, we're actually going to go into talking about the review of Flashpoint with Creepy Chris. So if you guys sit back and wait, we're going to dive right into that.
Creepy Chris's Review Corner.
About being a firefighter. We have only played the basic rules of this game. There's advanced rules that will probably tear you apart. The objective of the game is to save 7 victims in this house. You lose if 4 victims are killed, or there's 24 black cubes that can be put on the board. How those get made is from explosions by the fires. The mechanics of the game is each firefighter gets 4 action points for the basic game. You can move, put out a fire, put out smoke, or chop. Chop is very dangerous. You can chop through a wall. Takes half your turn. If you use all 4 action points, you make a wall. But you're using those black cubes that will crush the house.
Correction, you make a hole. Without a wall.
So, yeah. Sorry.
You're like, fix it, Felix.
Yeah. From Wreck-It Ralph.
Why does everything I touch fix?
You make a hole. Those holes you can now go through.
Disney Pixar.
Yes, Disney Pixar.
You play as firefighters.
Yes, firefighters. Rescuing people.
Yes, from a burning building.
That's only Disney, actually.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Just clarifying.
So Flashpoint Fire Rescue, great. I'd give this game a 4 out of 5 at this point, because we haven't played Advanced Rules, not entirely read them yet.
Yeah, but I feel like there's been a couple times
where are we officially starting our scale now? Or is our scale going to be a 5-point scale or a 10-point scale?
No, we're going to go with the 7-point scale.
No, gosh.
We do things different here at Clean Cut Casual.
It's a 6.5.
Let's just make it a 6.5 scale.
6.5 scale. It's so good. It's over 5 stars. It's 6.5.
And you get to rescue kitties.
And dogs.
And dogs.
There's a dog and a cat.
I rescue the dogs.
I think the animals should be worth more, personally. Because they probably
I feel like the animal should be more difficult to get out of.
Yeah.
They like run away from
like
you.
Every time you move, they drop a space behind you.
You would never get out of
that.
And
then
the
big, big spindles fall from the ceiling.
And the basic version, to actually rescue a victim, all you have to do is make it out of the building. In the advanced rules, there will actually be an ambulance outside, and you have to make it to that, which, depending on where that would be, could be awful.
Yeah, then I almost feel like we always go with the strategy of being like some people deal with fires and some people deal with rescuing.
Yes.
And I feel like in that circumstance, it has to be like some people deal with fires, some people deal with rescuing.
Yeah, because in the advance, someone has the ability to be the ambulance driver. Like that's the card. I'm assuming that he gets to move that better than someone else. I haven't read the stat cards.
Yeah, I really don't think the advanced version is any harder than Pandemic's normal version. You know, it's just a matter
it's very Pandemic-esque. Like, especially with the explosions. That's like getting, an overrun.
Yeah, and the roll,
like an outbreak.
The roll cards, they just basically took those away, whereas Pandemic, you have them all the time,
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys should try it. Step up.
We've played Pandemic.
No, to the advanced version.
Advanced version of Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
Yes, well, I think every time we've played it with new people, and I think
that's cool.
Ethan nor I explain what the actual strategy should be for that first scenario. We just kind of let them go with it and go do our own
There's
thing.
A fire.
The game is quick enough that if you don't explain it and you just royally flop, then everybody's like, oh, that game was totally fucking sweet. Let's play it again.
I totally understand what I need to do. Someone needs to go put out those fires. Someone else needs to get the victims. We shouldn't all be going
fighter.
To fire.
I get it now.
It's awful.
I have concluded, though, that every single time we play that the problem always arises in the hallway in the center of the board.
Yes, that hallway can go quick.
Yeah.
Have you played the other board yet?
Yes, it was much easier.
We've played both sides. The other side was much, much easier. Because that center hallway's got a billion doors.
Yeah, there's
so we realized that we're
fade out the fire.
You just keep the doors closed, I think we did that probably halfway through, and then we started opening them up so we wouldn't actually
get the explosions all over the place. Yeah.
So fire tokens would hit.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we were containing rooms, and one person would stay in that area, letting out those fires so they wouldn't break out anyway.
I definitely started it by chopping through a wall.
Yes.
Yeah,
every other time I play.
Which is bad. But awesome,
be a door in the next
awesome
phase,
game.
Nope.
Like we said, it's super quick, it's super fun, it's easy to learn, it's great for the family, which I think is a big, huge positive note for Ryan.
Ryan's family segment, yeah. If you want to play a game with the family, for kids, it's very easy to teach if you're just using the beginner rules. And it's very cool because, once again, who doesn't want to object to be firefighters saving people from a burning building? It's a very good...
Rehashing episode one.
It's a very good theme that not too many people are going to disagree with. And, you can just show kids and have a bunch of fun with it. You can bring it to different events, and it's really good.
So do we want to dive into talk about game parts? Physically talking about the parts of the game?
Components?
Components. That's the term I'm looking for. The official
game parts.
Game parts.
Parts. Sure.
how the board is set up, etc. Because we didn't really dive into how specifically how do fires spawn?
Yeah.
Well,
fires
spawn from grease fires.
Yeah.
It's made by what, indie board game?
Yes, that indie board games. Indie.
Which they make another game, I think, called
It's a
Revolution that looks really.
Yes,
good.
It's Revolution.
Yeah, I've played it.
Not Revolution. Revolution is Steve Jackson.
Yes, Resistance.
Yeah.
Resistance.
Panic Room also, or something like that. I'm gonna forget.
I don't know about Panic Room.
Revolution is supposed to be really good.
That's the artist.
But anyway,
Panic Room is
Flashpoint Fire Rescue is also the same artist in Police Precinct.
Yes.
Which I think is awesome looking.
That's this year, isn't it?
Yes. Hopefully. It's supposed to be this quarter. I hope so. We'll see, though.
Very good.
So
And Agents of Skirmish, same artwork.
Yes, yes.
The spy game that comes with a 500-page encounter book.
Which is crazy, because everyone is just complaining about his art. Bad. And it's, I think it's great. I love whatever art style you would call it.
Well, it's
I feel like for a 20-minute game, like, yeah, art is always an important process, me being the artist of the group, but like, in a 20-minute game, I'd rather play a game that's like, you know, pretty streamlined style artwork. Like, if I'm spending 3 hours staring at a board, the thing better look pretty fucking nice.
Well, a lot of his artwork is all portraits of just like the face.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, there's no like, you know, very dramatic poses or anything like that. But for those games that he does it, it works. You know, so I like the art. Like Police Precinct.
Well, most of the stuff he does is relatively like more realistic.
Yeah, more realistic. Yes. Like, are you going to be like, you know, hanging off a helicopter in Police Precinct with a gun, like, you know?
Probably not.
In Flashpoint Fire Rescue, you're doing a backflip while shooting your hose. It's like an ID is what it looks like. You know, like, it looks like their ID picture, which is great. Like, this is your employee figures.
Products by Indie Games. make them look like IDs. Actually, put them on actual badge clips that you clip to your shirt.
Well, that's what it is.
If you actually pick up the copy of this game now, Flashpoint Fire Rescue, you can thank Kickstarter for them actually having firefighter figures instead of just
pawns.
Cubes.
Yeah. They were like pawns before, weren't they? Just like
pawns? Yeah, they were pawns. Yeah, and then they you're correct, not cubes.
Yeah,
little pawns.
Those miniatures are pretty
little bowling pawns.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like what Pandemic has. Well, there's awesome firefighter miniatures.
Yes.
Yes. We've already done
great, great.
The board, which is, you know, roughly maybe 1.5 by 2 feet in size.
Probably double-sided.
It's divided into a 6x8 gridded system. That's actually the system how the game runs on placing fires at the end of each player's turn.
And
discuss that.
POI, points of interest. So the game setup for the beginning of the game is inside the book and the mechanics. A turn goes, you do your 4 action points, and then you'll roll for smoke placement. If you roll a location that already has smoke on it, it becomes a fire. If smoke lands adjacent to a fire, it instantly becomes a fire. And then the most devastating one is if you put a smoke on a fire, it does an explosion.
Or a fire on a fire. Oh, yes, smoke
it's
on a fire.
Smoke on a fire.
Yeah, it's if it spawns on it.
Yes.
That's right.
And that is awful because that does a, I guess, plus sign explosion. Which, if there's an open spot, lays down another fire. If it's an enclosed spot, you'll lay down a black cube. And you do that for each side.
Each of the 4 adjacent, perpendicular.
Yeah. Those happen 2 or 3 turns in a row. The game is pretty much going to be over.
That's about the first... That was, like, the first time when I played it. Was, like...
Yeah,
and, it was literally, like, it got out of hand really quick.
Yes. The other hard part is... There's points of interest. That's how you wonder if there is a victim actually there, but it can actually be blank. And the first game we played, we probably hit all 4 of the blanks back to back to back, which was awful.
People who are familiar with Pandemic, very, very similar. And not that they're walking around like a world map, but using your action allocations. And anyone who's used to action allocation systems like... Pandemic, where you have a certain number of actions, you get that many actions to do your turn, or Forbidden Island. One thing that this game does very unique is that you can save leftover actions to another turn. You get 4 actions a turn. If you don't use all your actions, you get an action counter, and then next turn, like, let's say if you don't use one of your actions one turn, you'll have 5 actions for the next turn.
And that happens a quite deal a lot.
Yes, and it's up to a max of 4, correct?
Yeah, so
you can't save
8.
More than 4, yes. Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn the second time we played it, someone had like 8 stored up actions that were just like, wow, mega rush to the buildings.
I don't know.
stream of steroids running through this burning house.
I still think you should be able to carry 2 victims and just use all 4 action points.
Oh, that'd be awesome. 1 on each arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do we want to go into our favorite part of the game of each person, and then we'll give it our overall rating on a 6.5 scale.
I like that idea.
6.5 scale?
Well, you know, it's your podcast, but, you know.
It's a 6.5 scale.
Let's do more realistic.
Kirby Chris, what was your favorite aspect of Flashpoint Fire Rescue, being the owner of Flashpoint Fire Rescue?
My favorite part is rolling to see where the fire lands. I think that's the best, most fun mechanic in the game. Chaos.
And by the way, Flashpoint Fire Rescue is ranked 142 on Board Game
Geek. Beats Andor.
So, beats a lot of things.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
My favorite aspect of Flashpoint is probably saving your actions. I just really like that because nobody, like even Defenders of the Realm hasn't done that, you know, right? Anything like
that.
And you
don't feel like you're wasting your action doing
nothing. The theme is really
nothing.
My major favorite aspect because I'm very... It really does feel like this house is burning. We gotta get these people out. Oh my gosh, there's more fire. Oh man, I walked over here. Oh man, I fell over. There's an explosion because you get knocked out. You know when there's an explosion, you gotta go to a
ambulance. Ambulance.
Yeah, and it's and then if you're walking through fire, it takes longer to walk through. If you're walking through smoke, it takes longer to walk through.
And you can't end in fire unless you have. Yeah, you're playing with the advanced rules and you have a haz mask.
The fact that if smoke spawns next to fire, it becomes fire is an extremely cool aspect of the game of the fire spreading. It is hopeless.
My favorite part is squirting the fire with my hose.
Okay.
This is what we get from Northern Ohio, goddammit. And of course, my favorite part is chopping through fucking walls. Because sometimes I'm angry, but I like chopping through walls. Streamlining in board games always wins. So to go to our rating scale, on the 6.5 scale, we will reward the opportunity to give this overall rating to the person who gave the review the most. So Creepy Chris, what is your rating on a 6.5 scale?
We're using 6.5. I would go with a 6.
A 6.
Yes.
Will you give a justification why it did not receive that 0.5?
That'd be a perfect game, and I don't think there's a perfect game out there.
You think it's as close to perfect as you can get?
For what it is, for the theme, for how quick it plays, for how easy it is to learn, for the mechanics going really well, yeah, I think it
deserves
a 6.
For being a firefighter board game and it feeling exactly like that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty damn close to being perfect for what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it is definitely like, here is your game. It is not just a theme thrown on mechanics that make no sense.
What's the price on that game?
Game is $40.
I think for $40, for the amount of players that can play it, for how quick it is, and how creative the game design is.
I was trying to look up a components
is
like list.
Entirely worth it.
And good six-player games like that are hard to find.
It is. And it has two expansions already. Again,
thanks
to Kickstarter.
Good six-player games that you can play with two players.
Yes.
You can play two players, right?
Yes.
Good six-player games that don't bog at all.
Yes, it doesn't bog.
You know,
I mean, we had, what, 20 minutes, so I had to leave to work, and we hauled ass.
Yeah, we hauled ass to play that game. Yeah, and we won. Yeah.
So
of course, the whole house was on fire. But we got 7 victims out. But the entire house was on fire.
Yeah,
I think we had like 7 black cubes left. So I mean, it's not you're gonna win or it's close to the entire game. Like it's strategized.
Well, there's a chance of the roll too. That's,
yes,
you know, the nature of most board games, an element of chance.
So you want me to get into technical things for it?
If you would like to read the components list.
No, I can't find the component list right now. But I will give a lot of other good information about the game.
So we will
designer. Is Kevin Lansing. Artist is Louis Francisco. And he was the one that did a lot of the artwork for, you know, all the other games we were talking about. Year published is 2011. Number of players, 1-6. That user suggested number of players. They say it's best with 4 people, but they recommend however many it plays up to. 45 minutes playing time, 10 and up. User suggested ages is 8 and up. You know, they think that, you know, even younger kids can really, really understand this game. And I definitely believe that, too. It won the 2012 Golden Geek Best Family Board Game nominee, Flashpoint Fire Rescue was. Golden Geek Best Thematic Board Game nominee. Its category is adventure. There are mechanics in the game, which I definitely want to get into this with a lot of different games. Mechanics are action point allowance system, cooperative gameplay, dice rolling, grid movement, pick up and deliver, simulation, and variable player powers.
Those topics I didn't even know existed as descriptions.
Pretty good breakdown.
What was the one? It was the pick up and
Pick up and deliver.
Pick up and deliver.
Yeah, like pizza.
We will have to make the UPS-based game.
Hmm.
And the, or you have to throw the package over the fence and see if you don't break it.
And the overlord's name will be Tom.
There you go. This mechanic usually requires players to pick up an item or good at one location on the playing board and bring it to another location on the playing board.
So on that note, we are going to lead into our best and worst of the 2019. Dive into our topic discussing the best and worst of 2012. We are actually going to begin with the worst and end on the lightest note possible for this podcast. So if AP Chaos would like to start out with his most miserable possible experience of the past year.
Mine would have to go to probably the Walking Dead board game. Not the one based on the comic, but the one based on the show. The one made by Cryptozoic. I love Walking Dead. Love it with a passion. It's great. The video game from Telltale Games is amazing. That won Game of the Year, actually, you know, on the VGAs. So
it did.
They won Game of the Year a lot of different publications. So the board game came out first, but like I was expecting a lot from the board game. It's a good theme. It's a good license. Really good license for Walking Dead.
How could you do it, Robert Kirkham?
Yeah. How could you do it, Robert Kirkham? You know, I can see some people definitely like it. You know, it's very simple. It's a move your marker, have an encounter, you know, go around the map. But the map is literally a sorry board. That's pretty much what the map is. Instead of it being, you know, like a map of, you know, the U.S. or just, you know, a map in general, just like a sorry board, really. That's what it is. It's bad. And the board isn't even a board. It's like a magic playmat. You know, they said it was to make it so it wasn't it was like super durable and everything. I was expecting a lot more from the game, and it was really disappointing that it just kind of fell flat.
Definitely. Yeah, well, they probably had to spend more than enough money just to get the licensing rights to do it. It's like, why didn't they spend the rest of the money to bring the game up the bar to actually enjoy playing it?
And I think they were worried that, you know, people would buy it since they watched the show, so they wanted them to just have a simple game that they had some fun with. But you know,
it's almost like they wanted to make the Walking Dead Monopoly game and wasn't able to get it as a Monopoly title. And then they wanted to make it a Walking Dead sorry game and they weren't able to get it as a sorry title. So they like bastardized the two together and made the Walking Dead board game.
Yep. And that's that.
Yeah, I don't even think there's much else we can say about the Walking Dead board game.
Wish it would have been good. Yeah. That'd have been sweet. But it got slaughtered. Mine was Uncharted, the board game. It's supposed to be a like deck building game, and it's not that the game was like completely horrible. It's just really not what I expected. I felt the game took a little too long for what it was, and it felt like the reverse of a deck building game, because I believe you could pretty much take cards from other opponents, and they just wasted their entire turns trying to get those cards, and it wasn't what I thought it would be. Really was the most disappointing factor, because I think it's made by the same people that do the Resident Evil deck building game, which is pretty well done for what it is.
Yeah, a pretty large followed card game.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, the Resident Evil deck building game has like 5 expansions now. Uncharted has none. So I think they realized that they probably messed up the formula. They were trying to complete like the same magic that they had with the deck building game for Resident Evil.
Misuse of a license. It's interesting that both of our negatives are for license games too.
Yeah, I think it was Bandai that actually
brought
that game, both those games out. I think Bandai ended up making. I think it's just disappointing that someone took a franchise that's, you know, an amazing game on the PlayStation 3, and you know everyone wants to cross over to something. Board games are getting huge, you know, and it's such an easy crossover from video games to board games, but it's disappointing.
Especially a storyline-driven game like Uncharted that could have so much realm of possibility in a board game.
Yeah, and it's just disappointing to see a franchise, you know, try to stretch out and just fail so miserably at it, and they don't take the time, you know, to really work out mechanics or how the game should be played, and they just kind of throw it together and just let it out there. I think that's the same reason why Walking Dead is just so bad. It's not what you expected at all from them.
Yeah, I stuttered just because I couldn't find anything else to say about it, because there's just nothing to say. Yeah. It's just there.
It's like you want to play a game like Walking Dead, go play Monopoly.
Go play Sorry, because Sorry's awesome.
Sorry's
pretty freaking sweet.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Are you serious? Come on.
That will be the review that follows the review of Linen Finish.
There you go.
There'll be Linen Finish, Sorry, See Through Dice, and then Sorry.
Sorry deck doesn't have Linen Finish, but that's okay. I have the wooden Sorry set.
What if real it quick.
If it what did, what if awesome. It did have Linen Finish?
Best of 2012 for each awesome. Person?
Yeah, let's get off the depressing topic of the worst and let's talk about the most exciting games of 2012.
Mine's actually a game that originally came out in 2011, but they had an enhanced edition come out in 2012, which is called Sentinels of the Multiverse. Probably the coolest game I've ever picked up that is a basically pre-built deck, and your superheroes taking on a villain. Why this hit me for a Best of 2012. Yes, fully cooperative. The downfall in the first game, the first make of the game was, if you only played it with two people, you really needed to each person have two heroes to actually balance out the power of the villains. So if you only wanted to play with two heroes, you were pretty much going to play a 5-minute setup game and a 2-minute lose game.
It's very accurate.
What they added to the game was they added H's on the cards for the villains, which indicated how much damage is done by the villains depending on how many players are actually playing the game. This makes it a little easier for the heroes when you're only playing with a few. And also, since they already hit expansions on this game, they went ahead and created a much better box design for the game, which also fits all the current expansions that are out. The first box, which this is the first game these guys have ever made, so you really can't complain about it, because cards are expensive. So, and the game is fairly cheap. I think it's $40 for the first Sentinels of the Multiverse, and I think the enhanced edition is now at $40 too.
Yeah, same price.
So the first box was just awful.
The box now is awesome.
Yes, the box now is amazing, and it fits, like I said, all the current expansions. So that was like my favorite thing for it was, one, they fixed all the villains, and two, there was a box that could carry all my expansions. I love this game.
And to move from talking about card games, we will talk about my favorite game of 2012. And, of course, my favorite game of 2012, being a zombie sucker I am, is Zombicide, which was an original Kickstarter project by Guillotine Games.
Yeah, I think that was near at the end of 2010 when they Kickstarted that.
Did they really Kickstart it for over a year?
I think so.
Wow.
It came out last year, you know, they released Gen Con.
Yes. Came out for Gen Con, but I'm pretty sure it was pretty sure it took over a year for them to make it.
Wow. Well, I mean, the thing comes with like a million minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. So
awesome.
77
awesome.
Zombies.
I mean, every single topic I can talk about with this game was just really well designed and well put together. You know, it's a scenario based dungeon crawl game. I guess. Dungeon crawl. You know, you move you and your characters throughout the map in order to complete objectives or reach an exit point while slaying some zombies along the way. There's a couple mechanics in there dealing with combat that was kind of a little bit weird, but from a lot of the reading I've been doing, especially on BoardGameGeek, most people have kind of house ruled it that now when you miss firing into a space that your teammate is in, those are what deal damage to your teammates, rather than when you roll into a space and your first hit hits, which I think thematically makes a little bit more sense that if you missed, you probably hit one of your friends rather than you hit somebody else. And that it also promotes players shooting with like more accurate weapons into the location. But the boards were awesome. You know, they were heavy duty gator board cardboard that were double sided.
Yeah, all double sided.
The game came with what, 10 scenarios?
Yep.
That were all, and all of them, you know, range in difficulty. They also on their website recently went back and added on the pages the difficulty, like easy, medium, or hard, and the recommended player numbers. Just because there was so many players.
That's awesome.
There was like two or three scenarios that were like incredibly difficult with a particular number of players. So they like went back and retweaked that. So, you know, I'm happy that the game came out in extremely nice production value. It was well packaged when you received it. And it all holds up very well in it. And they also been releasing tons of just free bonus material scenarios and stuff online for you to be able to use. So my pick for 2012 is Zombicide.
My pick for 2012 would definitely be Descent. Journeys in the Dark, the second edition. I'm not going to get too much into it because I talked about it a lot last podcast even. You know, it's a dungeon crawler, really, really good game. 16 different scenarios, has a campaign play, has, you know, 8 different heroes you can choose from, 4 different classes, well, four different archetypes with two classes per archetype, so lots of different options for you, tons of different monsters. I'll definitely talk about this more, but Descent Juries and Dark Second Edition was definitely my best game from 2012. It was most anticipated because they announced it like a while ago, like Second Edition, like over like a year or so ago, and it's really good.
Definitely. Just real quick, not to make this go any longer, but would you say the game coming out for the Second Edition was your favorite part, or the announcement of the conversion kit was probably the best part?
The announcement of Second Edition, just because it was like 2 years since any Descent expansion, so I thought the game was done. You know, I thought like, man, you know, they were doing an expansion every year for original Descent First Edition. You know, it came out in 2005, then it was like 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, all had expansions like every year. And then I was like, man, there's no expansion.
there's no got expansion. You all nervous and anxious.
Yeah, like, is my game done? Like, this is terrible, especially because Kevin Wilson went in separate ways. It doesn't work for Fantasy Flight anymore. That was the designer of the original game. With them doing Second Edition, they did it really well. And the fact that they made the conversion kit where you can use all your First Edition plastic, like all your miniatures, you can use all the old heroes and all the old monsters with Second Edition, was a great move. But yeah, it's my favorite game, definitely.
And then real quick to wrap up the best and worst of 2012, let us talk about the honorable mentions real quickly. Not in detail, just titles, you know. So my honorable mention was Mice and Mystics. You know, I'm a sucker for games that I can play with friends who aren't as accustomed to playing war games, and Mice and Mystics was a really good transitional game leading into a more medium difficulty game from your standard Catan intro games. So Mice and Mystics, it's a sweet game.
That was the first game I showed you.
Yeah.
Like from
was,
yeah.
It was awesome.
That's how our friendship began.
Yeah.
Mice and Mystics.
And it's supposed to be coming in the mail tomorrow. Which thanks to Martin Luther King Day, I probably won't be receiving it for another week.
Yeah.
But at least we played a shit ton of board games.
Did you have an honorable mention?
I don't think I did. I named my baby. I mean, Sentinels, those guys deserve every aspect that they should get. If it wasn't for Kickstarter, that game wouldn't be made. And the support of the fans is what making that game keep going, because that company is completely, I think, fully independent. And they rock out. And because of Kickstarter, King of Tokyo came out in 2011.
Oh, I know you all love King of Tokyo.
King of Tokyo is an amazing game. That is phenomenal.
Ridiculous.
But it came out in 2011. But it's an awesome game. Made by who?
It's made by Richard Garfield.
Yeah. Yeah. Who makes... What else does he make, Ethan, that you like?
Hey, Ryan, what was your honorable mention of 2012?
Richard Garfield also makes Robo Rally.
Robo Rally?
Yeah.
Robo Rally. I love
Robo Rally.
And Magic the Gathering.
Oh,
that's Magic. Pretty much the big one. Yeah. Ethan loves Magic the Gathering.
But yeah, Robo Rally is great. My honorable mention would definitely be Mage Wars. Mage Wars is incredible. It is such a good game. The fact that you can get different cards into your spell book and you bring your spell book into a battle. And yeah, it's good. So I can't do that. So
we put you on the dive.
Yeah, I can't do that. I'll talk about Mage Wars.
Everybody for joining us for season one, episode two of Clean Cut Casual, a Ohio-based podcast focusing on the current board game trend, community, and population. I also want to thank everybody who has tuned in and also have supported us since the first episode, since this is only the second. The Facebook is constantly flittering with cool and exciting things going on in the Cincinnati area, along with areas relatively close to us in Dayton and the Columbus area, and hopefully a website will be kicking off the ground within the next month that will actually kind of be the hosting hub of a lot of different groups in the Cincinnati area, including CAG, COW, multiple different shops, including, you know, YottaQuest, Eastside Cards and Games, which obviously by far is the best in the area.
Which we stationed from.
Which is where we are currently recording this podcast from. So I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for the past 2 weeks and expect another one coming up in the next 2 weeks. This is Ethan Schultz.
Creepy Chris.
Ryan Hicks.
And Z.
Have a good night, everybody.